And we're live.
Hello, and welcome back to a monochromatic episode of the First Time Watchers podcast.
Because we like to watch.
My name is Tim Costa, and with me are...
Walter Vinci.
Romano Da Silva.
What we like to do on the FTW podcast is find a movie that neither of us have seen, watch it together, and then discuss. These movies could be new, they could be old, or something that is on all of our lists of shame. Remember also to email us at firsttimewatchers@gmail.com and stay tuned to the end of the episode for other ways to contact us and to find out what we will be discussing next week. In this episode, we will be briefly discussing The Bourne Legacy and then have a deeper discussion of the Joe Carnahan film, The Grey.
This is because one of us didn't see The Bourne Legacy.
And I feel by the end of the episode, one of us will be smarter than the others.
But before we get into all that, it is time for Yay or Nay. Yay! This is the part of the show where we discuss what each of us have seen recently on our own. Hermano.
What the hell did I watch? First, I watched a digital short series online called H+. This is very early in its stages of, I guess you could sort of call it a show. It's developed, I believe, by Bryan Singer, who directed, you know, the first two X-Men movies and most recent Superman. Basically, the show, if you can even call it a show, and the reason I say that is because there's only been two clips online, and they both average about 5-6 minutes.
So, is it just an online show?
As far as I know right now, I believe so, yes. Basically, the synopsis is... A future set story in which a virus has wiped out most of the human race, and those still alive have their minds linked to the internet 24 hours a day. Here, a viral incident leads to a new world order. So basically, that's how it is. In the beginning, they give you kind of like a brief explanation about what's going on in the world, and basically, scientists have developed a way for humans to have a chip implanted in them, and they could pretty much heal themselves, pretty much making doctors unnecessary. And I believe the project is called the H+. And if you've ever seen the thing that Google is working on, it's called like Google Glass. Have you guys seen this?
Nope.
It's kind of like these glasses where it almost gives the wearer like a heads-up display like you would have like in a video game or something like
yes,
that.
Yes, I have heard of this.
Okay, so basically this chip in the show allows you to have like a heads-up display. You could pretty much surf the internet, kind of like Minority Report style, or like the display in the most recent Mission Impossible, except without any physical screen. You just see it projected in front of your face.
Is it actually there, or is it like in your mind you're seeing it?
You see it, they physically show you it, but I'm not sure, they haven't really specified, but you kind of swipe it, control it like you would like you were surfing the internet. Huh. And you can watch like online TV.
I wonder, like, can other people see what that person is
no,
seeing?
No, as far as I can tell on the show, other people can't see what you're seeing. Huh. Because they specifically show a couple that the guy's watching like a basketball game or something, and the wife is unbeknownst to her, she doesn't know that he's doing it, and he's doing it while driving.
Oh, Jesus.
So it's kind of like this texting while driving thing going on, but
only a little bit worse.
Yeah, well, basically the show, of course it takes a turn for the worse. A virus breaks out, and anyone that was connected to the internet or this form of the internet is killed and drops dead, but those people that were in like a spot where they didn't have access or were not online survive.
Huh.
So it's very early. I've only seen two short clips.
Now you say clips. Do you mean that the episodes themselves are only a few minutes long, or that you've only seen a few?
They're on their webisodes, so they're not full like 30-minute like typical TV show episodes. Their webisodes, and basically the first and second clips that I saw are actually could be pretty much part of the first episode. So by the end, I think there's supposed to be a total of 6 to start, and by the end of that, you pretty much have 1 episode. But it's really well done. I mean, it seems like if this was a show on TV, I would absolutely watch it. It's very slick. it looks like it's well directed, well shot.
How did you hear about this?
Another website.
Oh.
And it just mentioned that he was working on a digital web series, and I was interested because I like Bryan Singer, so I checked it out, and it's definitely worth checking out. It's online. I think if you sign on, you sign up through Google, you'll get an advanced screening to all six webisodes.
So just Google H+.
Google H+, and you should get at least the first two were up by the time of this recording. So I definitely recommend people check it out, especially if you were fans of shows like Fringe or Lost. It should, you know, pique your interest.
Interesting. All right then. So that's a yay for you.
Yay, definitely. What else did I watch? Oh, I watched a 30 for 30 documentary from ESPN called Catching Hell.
Yes.
This is an Alex Gibney directed documentary. It mostly follows the incident that happened in the playoff series between the Chicago Cubs and the Florida Marlins, and how
back in
2003, where that infamous Steve Bartman reaching out to grab the foul ball. And it also slightly follows Bill Buckner from the 1986 playoff series with the Red Sox and the Mets, and the infamous
a playoff series, the World Series.
The World Series. No.
Bill Buckner. That was in the World Series.
That was the World Series. All right. Basically, it follows Bill Buckner to an extent as well, but the documentary is great. It kind of goes into scapegoats and mob mentalities during both of these individual series, and it's fascinating. Like the extent, all the behind the scenes, not behind the scenes, but all the like fan footage that they were able to get of people just recording with cameras or cell phones, all these different views that you didn't ever know. Like, it's pretty much the story behind the story.
Yeah. You know, I've seen most of this as well. And you know what's really great part in that is they interview Steve Lyons in that movie, who was a color commentator on Fox at the time. Fox was broadcasting that series.
Yes.
And they show clips of the following game after that series. I think it would have been Game 7.
Yep.
And him going back and looking at the tape on live TV and using the telestrator to circle the other fans that are reaching for the ball at the same time.
Yes.
You know, so at that time, there was a lot of uproar and anger towards that individual, Steve Bartman.
Yep.
But I give a lot of credit for Steve Lyons taking a step back and being rather rational about it and saying, hey, he wasn't the only one that was at fault in this.
And basically the whole theme of this documentary is to examine why people reacted that way, why everyone just focused on him, because, I mean, at that point, the Cubs were winning. They were winning 3-0.
Yeah.
And for some reason, when they ended up eventually losing the game, the Marlins scored like 8 runs in that inning, and they end up losing the game. Everyone just focused solely on that, and there were death threats. This guy had to like go into hiding.
And he also got to consider the history of the Chicago Cubs and what everybody was hoping for a World Series matchup. You got to think of the other side of the Red Sox and the Yankees, and you have to know what was going on there to fully appreciate this whole story.
Yeah, yeah. That's why I highly recommend the documentary. It's great.
Even if you're not into sports.
Yeah, this is not just for the sports fan. This is for anybody. Like, it's incredibly well done. It's very fascinating. Definitely yay on that.
Yeah, I agree.
And lastly, I watched another documentary called Resurrect Dead. I believe it has a sub... Mystery of the Toynbee Tiles. This is also an amazing documentary. I'd heard about it a while ago on another podcast. I had it on my instant queue for a while. I finally decided to check it out, and I highly, highly recommend it. It basically... it revolves around these tiles that are mysteriously located in different areas of, I believe it's just the East Coast. It stretches out to, I think, about as far as like Kansas, Ohio.
It says South America as well.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yeah. Well, as far as the United States, it's on the East Coast, but it also was discovered in South America. And it's just these tiles with this mysterious message. Basically, I don't know if it has it on there, but it's like Toynbee...
Well, the IMDb says, an urban mystery unfurls as one man pieces together the surreal meaning of hundreds of cryptic tiled messages that have been appearing in city streets across the U.S. and South America.
Yeah. Basically, it's this one guy who one day just walking outside discovers this tile, and he thinks it's pretty cool, thinks nothing of it. A while later, he discovers another one and another one and another one, and he starts getting really fascinated and wants to find out the history of these tiles because they all have the same message on them. And to anyone that would just walk upon these, they make no sense. But eventually he gets together with some other guys who have also found tiles in their cities, and they start kind of doing a little detective work and try to do the backstory of where these tiles may have originated from. And it's really like quite a well done mystery. It's not like most documentaries where there's someone conducting interviews and stuff like that. It's pretty much people just telling the story of how they came across and all their individual stories of how they first came across these tiles and how it kind of brought these people together. And they try to unravel this mystery together. And as they just start to discover certain things about the tiles, it only brings up more questions. And by the end, it's pretty crazy. Like,
does it ever answer?
I don't want to spoil it, like what eventually happens at the end, but I think it's probably the best conclusion that they could have come up with. And it's really well done. I highly recommend it. It's very fascinating. I was hooked from the whole time. I barely blinked watching this movie because it was that good. Highly recommend the day for that.
Yeah, so 86 minutes and you didn't blink. So nope. Dry eyes for you.
Yeah.
All right. Walter.
All right, I started off with watching a movie called Let the Bullets Fly. It's got Chow Yun-Fat in it, which was the sole reason why I wanted to watch it, because when I hear Chow Yun-Fat plus bullets, you have my attention. For those who don't know, Chow Yun-Fat was huge back in the 90s, along with John Woo, and patented what was known, well, not patented, but they kind of created a genre known as gun-fu, and so seeing this, I was like, oh, it's been a while since I've seen Chow Yun-Fat in an actual, shooting movie. And it's labeled as a comedy. And, the synopsis is 1920s China. A bandit arrives in a remote provincial town posing as the new mayor, where he faces off against a tyrannical local nobleman.
This sounds like a Western.
It does take place like kind of like in a Wild West kind of setting.
Yeah.
I thought at the very beginning I was in for a treat because, like, you see the main bandit leader, his name is Pocky Zhang. Some of the character names are really bizarre, like Soup, Pocky, named after food. The opening scene, you see a stagecoach with, like an armored stagecoach on a set of train rails being pulled by a bunch of horses. And you see there's a sniper with a gun, and he fires off, like, 7 shots, and his assistant goes, "Did you miss?" And he goes, "No, just let the bullets fly for a moment." And then the horses all suddenly break away. He wasn't aiming for the cart at all. He was aiming for the bridles that keep the horses on. So like at that point, I'm like, "Oh, this is gonna be awesome!" And then the movie makes absolutely no sense at that point. I could not make heads or tails of what the story, like the actual plot line was. Chow Yun-Fat is in it, and he's playing a bad guy, but no one's motives are really clear. Like the Pocky is supposed to be wants to be the mayor of this town, but Chow Yun-Fat is firmly entrenched as like this like kind of like cartel leader almost. A lot of the scenes are just really weird.
Do you think it could have used a little trimming?
It could have used a lot of trimming.
The movie's
like
it's like 132 minutes.
It's like almost 2 hours long. This movie. This movie's crazy.
It's over 2 hours, yeah.
And I mean, I remember watching it, going in a snack, and coming back, and I was going, I still have no idea what the fuck is going on. So I'm going to say nay on Let the Bullets Fly, simply because I couldn't make heads or tails. And I sat there through the whole movie just going, what is going on? Please, someone, give me some exposition. I don't know what everyone's motivation is on this. I can't figure this just from watching it. So I have to give that one a nay. And then, in contrast, something else has to do with bullets. I rewatched The Raid on Blu-ray. It came out this week, and I watched it on Blu-ray on my little TV.
Little TV?
Yep.
You need a better TV.
I need a better TV. I also need a better sound system.
Oh, yes.
Because when we saw this movie in the theater, and
yes.
it was loud.
Uh-huh.
And watching it on a small TV without a surround system kind of takes some of the punch
uh-huh.
out of it. Because I was like, what am I missing? Why do I not feel like so like absorbed? And I realized it's because I don't have the booming, you know, channel speakers that they have at the theater around me with all the gunplay. But the movie itself is still a hell of a lot of fun to watch. Basic story is you have a squad of Indonesian SWAT team officers going into a building to capture a crime lord who has set himself up at the top of the building. And their idea is that they want to go in stealthily and quietly. They get spotted and then are trapped in this building and have to fight their way out. And some of the best hand-to-hand fight scenes you'll see in modern movie making. Absolutely fantastic. It's directed by Gareth Evans, whose other movie, Merentau, also has the same lead. I can't think of the actor's name. But it's just martial arts action. You know, after the guns stop firing, it is martial arts action, balls to the wall.
Iko Uwais?
Yeah, Iko Uwais, who plays Rama, the young rookie, you know, police officer. And it's just awesome. So I give this wholehearted yay.
Well, it was in your top 5 years.
It wasn't my top 5 of 2012.
I think it just missed my top. I think it would have been like number 6.
And remains firmly entrenched in my top 5 still. I absolutely love this movie.
Armando, your thoughts on The Raid?
Oh, I loved it. I mean, I didn't even realize it had just come out, so I'll definitely be picking it up now that I know it's out. And yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's it for you?
Yep. And how about you, Tim?
Well, I got to watch the Bourne trilogy just to get myself psyched up for the Bourne Legacy. So obviously I started 1 through 3, and the first one, directed by Doug Liman, the Bourne Identity. Really good movie, you know, good entry, solid action thriller. Nice turn by Matt Damon. At that time, wasn't known for action, you know, and I think a lot of people were surprised at the time to see Matt Damon in an action movie, and most people were pleasantly surprised, I think. I liked Brian Cox. He, as usual, played a good bad guy, you know. I thought it was a little bit heavy. You know, it was funny because watching them all back to back to back, I was able to make a lot of comparisons. And I think the first one is actually the weakest of all of the three. I think they actually get better as they go along. The first one is a bit heavy on the intel talk, like, I need eyes on this now, or what's happening? Why aren't I seeing this? You know, that kind of stuff. But overall, you know, I really like it. Chris Cooper, of course, does a good job. You know, there's nobody that doesn't do a good job. You know, I think it's really solid. So then, of course, the second and third entries, the Bourne Supremacy and the Bourne Ultimatum, directed by Paul Greengrass, I think really up the ante. You really find out more about the department and the section that made Jason Bourne and who he was. It really delves deeper into his past. Brian Cox returns in the second movie and becomes even more of an asshole than he was in the first. Joan Allen and David Strathairn do nice jobs as CIA officials butting heads in the third movie, and I think the action is much better. Paul Greengrass really has a great sense of action pacing and directing and where to place his camera, and the car chases are amazing.
Yes. And that's my favorite part of the second Bourne movie, is that chase with Matt Damon against Carl Urban in the taxi cab.
Yeah.
Where they're just, I'm like, how much punishment can this car take?
Well, speaking of punishment, the third movie really ups it with the New York City chase. He just destroys a cop car. Destroys it. Now, I will say that the third movie is a bit of a rehash of the second movie, but still, I think it's great. I love the cat and mouse game at the end. You know, obviously this is going to tie into our mini review of The Bourne Legacy, but I want to get your guys' opinions of the original trilogy. Wally.
It's been a while since I've seen the original trilogy. I actually went looking for it so I could get it cheaply on Blu-ray this past weekend, but no such luck. Yeah. All I could find was on like regular DVD. I was like, oh, if I'm going to get it, I'm going to get the the trilogy on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
I remember loving all three of these movies when they came out. And I was like, yes! And I really, especially that second one, especially the one with Carl Urban in it, where he is chasing Matt Damon around.
Yeah.
Especially that car chase. Still, I'm like, yeah. I just watched that.
Hermano?
I've never been a fan of these movies.
Why? I don't understand how you cannot be.
Yeah, it's pretty. I mean, they're good action movies. They're solidly done.
I remember it's one of those movies. It's kind of like I'll bring it back to The Departed. Everyone told me, "Oh, The Departed, it's so awesome! You got to see it." And then I watched it, and I was like, "This movie is crap." I won't say the Bourne trilogy is crap, but I will say that it's along the same lines. People said, "Oh, this is the greatest thing ever! You got to see it." And I watched it, and I'm just like, it does not live up to the hype. I think that's the problem.
So people were saying that with the first one, because you had never seen the first one?
I didn't see the first one in the theater. I didn't see the second one in the theater. In fact, I think I saw both of them for the first time when they were on DVD. And I remember people saying, you got to see these movies. It's so good. It's so good. I think it's a case of being overhyped. Like, I think they're okay. I don't think they're terrible, but they were super overhyped for me. And the third one, I actually went to see in the theater because I heard it was good. It's better than the other two or whatever.
I agree with that statement.
And I fell asleep in the theater.
I was bored to tears.
I was like, I just do not see what people see in these movies.
I don't understand how you can fall asleep in the third movie.
It was boring. Like, whenever it switched away from Matt Damon, it was just a lot of, like, fucking CIA talk or whatever. And it's just, like, you know, code words and blah, blah, blah. And, like, backstory into Treadstone and all this crap.
There wasn't that much of that. Switch quickly back to Matt Damon.
I just think when they're trying to explain things, it comes off as really boring and dry dialogue. Like, it just really bad. I mean, it's not for me. You guys love it. That's great. I'm not begrudging you guys your opinion. I'm just saying, I don't think it's the series that everyone makes it out to be.
Well,
that's my opinion.
That's a shame. Well, obviously, those are three movies that I was able to see, the Bourne trilogy, and I'm a yay for all of them. I recommend them highly. Like I said, I think they get better as they go along. The story, the action, just everything. So yay for the Bourne trilogy. Okay, now it's time for Trailer Hitches. This is the part of the show that gives us each an opportunity to mention a movie trailer that either gets us on board for an upcoming movie or makes us want to bitch. Hermano?
Trailer I saw was for a movie called Seven Psychopaths. It's from the director of In Bruges, which I liked quite a bit.
Yes, very good movie.
I forget the director's name. I think it's something McDonough, Martin McDonough maybe?
Yes, Martin McDonough.
Martin McDonough. Basically, the movie stars Woody Harrelson, Colin Farrell, Christopher Walken, and Sam
Rockwell.
And from what I can tell, it's going to be another quirky movie, sort of like In Bruges, where basically it looks like Sam Rockwell, Colin Farrell, and Christopher Walken's characters are dog thieves. They steal a dog from Woody Harrelson's character, and I guess Woody Harrelson's like a big time thug, and they accidentally steal from him. They don't know who he is or whatever, at least from what I can tell. And basically, you know, the story goes from there. They're kind of on the run. You know, Woody Harrelson's trying to get his dog back. It's a lot of quirky dialogue.
Right. So the movie poster has a tagline.
Yes.
It says, "They won't take any Shih Tzu."
Yes, the dog that they stole is a Shih Tzu. So,
oh, God.
I think it looks like it's a lot of fun. I like those movies that kind of try to balance, dark humor, gritty.
Gritty is another word I'm not familiar with.
I love that grittiness. You know that. But it looks like a lot of fun. And at the end of the trailer, they actually have a scene that looks like it's Tom Waits from. He was also in the Denzel Washington movie there. The last one, what was it called? Crap.
God. Do I have to do all the work for you?
The one where he's... I don't want to... This idea. I almost dropped the bomb.
The Book of Eli?
Book of Eli. Jesus, thanks. He was the shopkeeper there that was fixing stuff up, but he's also an amazing musician. So I'm definitely looking forward to the movie.
Yeah, well, that tagline on the poster is automatic no for me.
Come on, it's not a serious tagline. I mean, you can't
take it seriously. It's a terrible tagline.
It is a terrible tagline, but it's on purpose.
No, sorry.
Whatever. Anyway, I'm looking forward to it.
Good for you. Wally?
I brought up my curiosity is Catherine Bigelow's new movie, Zero Dark Thirty.
Which was on my top five of the year looking forward to.
The trailer for it is kind of a non-trailer, actually. It's a lot of talk, a lot of voiceover with a map. Like, you see, like, various aerial, like, Google, like, aerial shots.
Sounds like a teaser trailer.
Yeah, it's more like a teaser trailer. You can see, like, black lines kind of, like, moving through, like, redacted lines, mm-hmm. like, moving through, like, different parts of it. And then the thing that kind of hooked me at the end is where you hear, like, you know, the voiceover from the movie, and one of the things they talk about, you hear somebody shout over and over again, when was the last time you saw Bin Laden? But the closing shot of this trailer is you see an intersection, and there's, like, these roads, and then it flickers a little bit, and then you see, like, there's actually a structure that's actually kind of it kind of cloned out, so it just looks like there's nothing there. But then like it flutters again, and you see the compound, and then you see like you're looking at it through IR, and you see helicopters flying over it, and then that's the entirety of the trailer right there. Which Catherine Bigelow, she gave us the Hurt Locker, which I absolutely adored. She also gave us Point Break,
yes,
and K-19 Widowmaker.
Shut up.
So if there's one thing she, after seeing The Hurt Locker, there's one thing I say she handles really well is like that war movie, you know, like tension and action and all that. So I'm certainly curious to see how she's going to handle this. It does smack a little bit of propaganda to me, but again, I'll put that aside and go see the movie myself.
I don't know. I don't think she would be one to do a movie to capitalize on the moment, you know. I think this story is in good hands with her, you know. I'm looking at IMDb, and the writer is Mark Boal. He did the screenplay. I just want to see what else he has written. The Hurt Locker, okay, and In the Valley of Elah, which is another military story, which
yeah,
is very well
that.
Done.
It's really good.
Yeah, so... You know, I think it's in good hands between the two of them.
Especially if she incorporates surfboarding somehow.
Oh, God.
Navy SEALs are about helicopters on surfboards.
And Keanu Reeves throwing catching a dog.
Or they're shooting in the air.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Speaking my language.
I will talk about the trailer for Red Dawn. Now, this is the remake that has been in limbo for a couple of years now. It was... completed, oh gosh, I think about 2 years ago, but for some reason has just been in limbo for whatever reason.
You don't know the reason?
Oh, you know, you have some backstory?
A little bit. I'm going to get this wrong, though. I believe the initial protagonists in it were supposed to be China, I believe?
Yes.
And then they switched it at last minute because they didn't want to offend one of the largest foreign markets in the world.
Yeah.
So I think they switched it last minute to North Korea.
You know, now do you know that's the actual reason why they delayed it?
I know it's one
much?
Of the reasons.
Oh, there wasn't.
Because
had
to digitally remove all the Chinese symbols.
That's true.
From the entire movie.
I also thought it was some sort of licensing rights with the first one, with the original. I mean.
That could be part of it as well, but I know that other thing was one of the issues.
Okay. So, anyways, it's the remake of the, what was it, the 1980-something Red Dawn with Patrick Swayze and...
Yep. Charlie Sheen? Was he in it?
I don't know. I've only seen good portions of the original Red Dawn and have not liked what I've seen. And I saw the trailer for this, and I'm like, well, if they're sticking to a PG-13 rating like they are... I don't see any kind of improvement.
It's going to be a bloodless invasion.
Yes, very good. A bloodless invasion. And although, you know what? Speaking of bloodless PG-13 movies, the Bourne trilogy, PG-13, a lot of blood.
Yeah.
They do it very well. You know? That you got Jason Bourne stabbing guys with pens and Anyways, we're not talking about that. We're talking about Red Dawn. I don't know. It stars
Chris Hemsworth.
Chris Hemsworth and Josh Hutcherson and Josh Peck and Isabel Lucas and Jeffrey Dean Morgan's in it, I guess. That's okay. So, I don't know. I just didn't really see anything that made me say, hey, this is an improvement, you know? I just see rehash, updated kind of rehash. That's about it. I like the idea of the North Koreans invading, you know? That keeps it relevant to today. But, whatever. I'll bitch about it. Nope, not gonna see it. So, that brings us to The Bourne Legacy. IMDb describes the plot like this. An expansion of the universe from Robert Ludlum, centered on a new hero whose stakes have been triggered by the events of the previous three films. Now, Ollie, we just talked about the original trilogy, and as Hermano stated, he was not thrilled about those movies and decided to bow out of the viewing of The Bourne Legacy. So since this discussion will be between you and me, I will ask you, do you think that this expansion was necessary?
I don't know about necessary. I mean, overall, in my opinion of the movies, I actually kind of liked it.
Kind of liked
it. Yeah,
I agree. I found a lot
of good things to take away from this
movie. Sure, I enjoyed it to a degree as well.
As far as, is it necessary? No.
I would say no,
because you have the Bourne trilogy. It is a trilogy. It is closed.
Yeah.
Like, the story is closed.
And the story is really just about Jason Bourne, him finding
exactly.
out who he was, you know?
But in this, but on the other side of the coin, also makes sense that there would be other programs.
Absolutely.
Or, you know, other, you know, agents in, you know, in various other programs or means that they would probably employ for various various missions around the world.
Yeah.
So in one sense, no, not necessary. But in the other one, I'm like, ooh, I want to see more of this
right.
nifty universe.
If you're curious about the programs behind Treadstone and spawned from Treadstone that was established in the original trilogy,
yes.
you might find this interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you've seen the other two movies, you can gauge it, like where it falls in the Bourne timeline. It actually falls between 2 and 3.
Well, that is interesting. It does do a good job of establishing the timeline, but it really only establishes it for like the first 20 minutes of the movie. After
yeah.
that, it kind of abandons it. You know?
It does, because it's not really focusing on that timeline anymore. It's focusing on the Aaron Cross. On the Aaron Cross.
By
timeline.
The way, good name for an action hero.
Yes.
Aaron Cross.
So you know where it falls in the timeline. You have this, you know, this other agent that, you know, there are other agents out there, and you see a couple of those other agents.
Well, it's interesting.
Over the trilogy.
You know what? The marketing of this movie, on the poster itself, it says there was never just one. Now, that was established in the first three movies.
Yeah, because he fights a bunch of them.
Exactly.
They keep coming to kill him.
Exactly. So the marketing behind this is rather odd.
Yeah.
You know, trying to fool the audience into saying, hey, there was more than one Jason Bourne-like guy, you know?
They're like, no kidding me. He's like, Clive Owen's one of them.
Yeah, exactly. but, you know, I honestly think that this was actually a little bit too long.
Yes.
I think it could have trimmed about 20 minutes or so.
Bro, look who's saying trim some time now.
Yeah, that's right. Because there is a lot of exposition in this movie.
Yes.
And a lot of science talk, because it gets into the science of the medication that they have to provide these soldiers.
I like that. I like that part. It explains like how they you can see kind of how... what Jason Bourne could have been before he became Jason Bourne,
right.
and how they turned him into it.
And why he was experiencing those headaches and
exactly.
and
weird flashbacks.
Fugue moments, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. But during those scenes, didn't you kind of, especially during that one scene while they're escaping from the house fire and they pull over to the side of the road, don't you think it's a little too much exposition, a little too much science?
I liked it actually. It didn't hit me at all odd. Like where she's basically trying to explain to this guy who, she's like, this is how we made you. Like this is what we did, you know, using this concept, we're able to actually pattern like they turn you into what you are right now. Like before, like we don't know what you were before this, but from studying your cells and your genetic makeup and what we know about, you know, antigens and pathogens,
yeah.
we can tailor someone's DNA to be able to do crazy shit like you're doing right now.
Yeah, I agree. The explanation is fine. It's just, I think, over-explanation to a bit. Just a little bit.
I guess I have to disagree, because I think I think once she gets to the, you know, the whole thing about, like, when they finally, like, he finally saw, I was like, oh, so you can actually make this permanent if we, you know, if we can get to where we need to go next. Mm-hmm. She's like, yeah, well, I can try. You know what I mean? I'm like, all right, well, so now we can kind of see what happens when you continue to grow an agent. Like, what's the process like?
Okay. I also think that there were some odd editing choices, which I think also ties into the length of the movie. Like, the opening sequence of Aaron Cross hiking and traversing the mountains, that went on for a little while, and there were some points in there where I'm like, why are they showing so much of this? I don't think they needed to show as much. I understand they had to establish the wolves that he comes across and has to fend away, but even in between that and when he finally gets to the cabin, his destination,
yeah,
it's just a little too long.
Not even it's really his destination. He still has to keep going.
Yeah, yeah, but his waypoint.
His stopover to get, you know, like a reload on chems and you know what have you.
Yeah, and also after the attack on the place that he's staying in the log cabin. It shows Cross covering, you know, the tracking device that's inside him, taking out the rifle, putting it together, finding the right spot. All that whole scene was just way too long. You know, you just had to show him pointing the gun and firing it down, and then maybe show afterwards, well, how did they lose him? And then him uncovering the tin plate that was covering his tracking device.
I like that part, because you see, like, him, like, kind of thinking under pressure, like, all right, shit, I've already put two and two together, they're trying to kill me, or they're trying to kill us right now. Someone's trying to kill us. And I know I've got this E-perb in my body, so I got to find some way to kind of scramble so I can buy myself a few minutes. The contrast of this scene to the trailer. The trailer, you see the plane flying, and then you see Aaron Cross shooting at it. I thought that this particular scene was actually, like, you were seeing, like, Aaron Cross's, like, assignment, like an assassination.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, I'm sitting there going, oh, he's going to shoot the pilot of an airplane. He's going to make the airplane crash. It's going to be crazy.
Yeah.
But it's, like, just him trying to survive an attack and, you know, get away.
It's in the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, at the very beginning. Trying to get away from after they decide they're going to shut the entire, outcome section down. Even the trailer, like, kind of has, like, misleading plot points in it, or, like, statements.
Yeah.
Where they say, oh, he's, like, Treadstone without the inconsistency. That doesn't refer to anyone from Outcome. It refers to someone from Larks.
Yes. Yeah,
later on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I'm kind of flashing back and forth between the trailer and the actual movie to see, like, how they matched up. And they don't quite match up. The way I expected
them to.
Well,
that happens in a lot of movies. They edit the trailer just to make you believe one thing, and sometimes it just ends up being different. The action sequences in the movie overall were pretty good. You know, the Philippines chase, the rooftop scene,
yep,
was well done, I think. I liked that scene of Rachel Weisz screaming his name when she rounds the corner.
Yeah, because she knows he's going to get caught. And
yeah.
So she yells for him to give him a warning, because there's no way else she can signal him.
Yeah, yeah. That was good. The last motorcycle chase sequence.
That was pretty cool.
I won't spoil it, but the end scene is pretty brutal. I thought it was pretty good. Like I said before, you know, there's a lot of exposition. You know, if you're curious about the Treadstone program and the resulting programs, this is the movie for you.
Yeah.
If you're curious about the medication the soldiers are required to take, this is the movie for you. You know, that's another thing, though, is I don't think they really ever established the real need, desire, and reason why Aaron Cross needs these meds. They only show him in these states, but they don't say, you know, is explained enough why.
They do. Basically, the green pill allows him to maintain his physicality.
Right.
Until they do this thing in the movie that they call viraling out.
Yeah.
So later on in the movie, you find he's gotten sick at one point, which you don't see on camera. He had gone into the doctors to be looked at for some flu that he had gotten. And because of that, that was actually an experiment from them to see if they could have him keep his physical ability. And so he's able to keep that. The blue pill is for intellect.
Yeah, maybe, see, all this exposition, this is why I think that it needed to be trimmed down, because all this exposition you're providing to explain this, it's five times fold, you know, that I don't think is necessary in this movie. I think it's a little too complicated, a little overly complicated, and didn't need to be. I think it could have been simplified a little bit more.
And because we find out, like, Aaron Cross, before he became Aaron Cross, was a buck private in the military, and not the brightest bulb in the bunch. Mm. You even find out his recruiter added 16 points to his IQ score just to make the minimum.
Yeah.
So he needs these pills to maintain his kind of like his cutting edginess.
Yeah.
So and he explained, you know, she explains to him, like, you know, how it all works, and that spurs their trip to the Philippines.
Also, this movie just kind of ends, you know?
I hate that part. This is the only part of the movie I actually really hated.
Yeah, we won't describe it, but it just ends.
It just ends. That's the only way to describe it. It's like balls to the wall, and then somebody hit the brakes, and you hit a brick wall, and that's it.
Yeah, I know. It's interesting. The Q&A podcast with Jeff Goldsmith, he interviewed the Gilroys, who wrote and directed this movie. Well, Tony Gilroy directed this movie, and they talked to him about writing this movie. And they admitted that there is no end game, that they haven't established, that they haven't even thought of what the end of this, his story, Aaron Cross's story is.
And it shows.
Yeah, the studio did not give them any direction, and they did. They have no idea where it will end up. You know, and then that's why the second and third of the Bourne movies with Matt Damon are great, because you have that feeling that there is a finish line, that there is an end. You know where he's going, especially in the third movie. You know, you know what he wants to do.
Yeah.
And it ties it up very nicely, too.
Yeah.
In this one, I think that they realize that there's going to be a sequel and possibly a third movie. So they left it open-ended, but it was, you know, like in the second Bourne movie, they left it open-ended, but you knew that there was going to be a resulting story.
Yeah, because he's walking away at the very end of the second movie.
But this movie, you're like, well, what's the end game? What does he accomplish? Like, you know, there isn't enough of Aaron Cross wanting revenge or wanting to
he just wants his chems.
That's all he wants is his chems. He's a drug addict.
He's a super agent drug addict.
Yeah, that's all he is. Just give me my chems. They have to go to the Philippines to get the chems. Now, why couldn't they... Now, don't the chemicals, the pills that they eventually make in the Philippines have to be shipped to America?
Yeah.
Why can't they
and
get
it's a giant
a
factory? I'm thinking, they have a lot of green and blue pills in this factory.
Yeah, why can't they just go to a place where they ship like
because it wouldn't be exotic.
A port.
It wouldn't be exotic.
Yeah.
An exotic locale.
That's right. They go to the Philippines.
Spy movies need
Manila.
Exotic locales.
Gotta go to Manila. Yeah. Overall, what would you give this movie?
I'd give it a B.
Yeah, it's exactly what I would do. Is give it a B.
I'd give it.
Hermano.
I'd give it a.
And you haven't even seen it.
Nope. Yeah, I give it a B. I mean, it's certainly worth seeing if you want to see it, if you're into that kind of sort of backstory thing.
Well, you have to like the original trilogy to be able to be even interested in this, and I think you should see the original trilogy if you see this, because you might be a little lost.
Agreed. Best way I can put it to maybe some other geeks out there is you have your core rule book in the form of the Bourne trilogy, and this would be like a source book that shows you like other stuff that's going on that you might be able to get your hands on and say like in your own particular game.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough. All right. I guess that does it for the Bourne Legacy. Now we'll get into our feature review of Joe Carnahan's movie, The Gray, starring Liam Neeson, Dermot Mulroney, and Frank Grillo. IMDb describes it like this. After their plane crashes in Alaska, six oil workers are led by a skilled huntsman to survival, but a pack of merciless wolves haunts their every step. The two of you had this movie in your top five of the year so far, back when we recorded that episode a couple months ago, and I believe Hermano is the biggest champion of this film among the three of us, and I was finally able to see it this past weekend. Hermano, tell me why you like this film so much.
Because it's awesome. That's it.
No. Expand.
All right. Basically, it's It's one of those movies. I think I've already pretty much broken this down, so I'll keep it brief. The movie came out in January.
Yes.
January is like throw all your crappy movies in that month. You know what I mean? So I wasn't expecting much of it. It was one of those times where there wasn't anything else out. I was just going to see a movie just to see a movie. You know,
had the trailers interest you at all? Or
the trailers looked okay, but it wasn't anything that I'm like, holy shit, I gotta see this. So it's one of those things where like I'm like, hey, there's nothing else out. This looked somewhat interesting. I'll go check it out. The trailers, they marketed this movie completely one way, and this movie is totally something different for me. The movie has a heart that I didn't realize it was going to have. Like, I was so into this movie from like moment one, just the way it's shot. I'm going to use my favorite buzzword, gritty. The movie, a lot of the things I like about it are potentially spoilers, so I can't say everything until we get to spoilers, but there was a lot there that I didn't think was going to be there. It was one of those movies that, unlike like the Bourne movies, not to pick on them consistently, where they were super overhyped, I went into this movie with no expectations, and it blew me away. And that's how I think I would like to go into movies all the time if I could.
It's a bit hard considering what we do.
It's not that hard. I mean, you yourself stay away from trailers as much as you can.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously you need to see at least one trailer or hear something about a movie.
But we're on top of a lot of updated movie news and reviews as well.
Yeah, but I mean, this movie was one of those movies that it was just perfect. It was below the radar. No one was saying, holy shit, the gray looks amazing. No one was talking about it. I just randomly went to see it. It blew me away. And that's part of the huge reason why I loved it.
So it surpassed your expectations.
Yes.
So do you think that you agree that it surpassed your expectations? So do you think that kind of skews your ultimate viewpoint?
Yes and no. Well, I'll say no mostly because I was familiar with Joe Carnahan's work, but unbeknownst slightly. Like, he directed Narc with I think Jason Patrick and Kurt Russell,
okay,
I believe. But anyway, that movie, I didn't know he had directed that, but I remember liking that movie a lot back in the day. He also directed Smoking Aces, which I didn't realize, and I own that. I liked that movie quite a bit.
It was badass, actually.
Yeah, the first one. The second one was like straight DVD crap that I didn't even bother watching. But and then he also directed, a couple of years ago, The A-Team, which I thought was a lot of fun. And
a lot of fun, not great, but it's a lot of fun.
No, it was definitely not great, but it's one of those movies that every time it's on, I stop to watch it because there's moments in it. There are great performances from everybody.
the tank falling out of the sky is pretty fun.
Yes, there's a lot of fun in that movie. Like, it knows what it is. Like, it wasn't one of these movies that tried to be too serious. They were serious elements, but those were kind of on the back burner where I think comedy, they balanced comedy and the serious elements really well.
And I read an interview with Joe Carnahan, and he actually was not 100% invested in the A-Team. He wasn't fully on board with that movie, and it still was pretty fun.
And now he did The Gray, which is a smaller movie. I mean, it's probably more of like a passion project or a personal...
Yes, it was very personal to him.
And you could tell because it looks like he put a lot of like heart and effort into making this movie, into telling this story. And eventually where the story goes, I think, is perfect. Well, I'll let you guys discuss it.
Wally?
I specifically went to see this movie, actually. I saw the trailer for it. The trailer lies as to what kind of movie this actually is. The trailer makes it look like it's going to be this crazy actioner. This is Liam Neeson coming off the A-Team, coming off Taken. And I believe Tammy put it best when she said to me, she said, first Liam Neeson punches bad guys, then he punches monsters, and now he's punching wolves.
Now, I will agree if there was Nazis hunting me, if Albanian terrorists wanted to kidnap me, or if I somehow survived a plane crash, I would want Liam Neeson on my side.
Yes,
absolutely.
Yes. Why would you never want Neeson on your side?
If Liam Neeson knew I was going to die, I would want him next to me, leading me to the other side.
Which he does in the movie.
How great was that scene?
That is the best scene in the movie.
I think it's one of the best.
One of the best scenes in the movie.
I think that's the best scene in the movie.
And I think Do you want to expand on that?
No, I cut off.
This movie is not a it's not an action movie. It's a very thought-provoking movie. I didn't realize after I left the theater that there was actually something that happens after the credits.
Oh, really?
There is footage after the credits.
Did you see it?
No.
I went on YouTube. I went on YouTube to see what happens after the credits, and I wanted to choke the people in the audience because they're watching. They're seeing what I wanted to see after the credits, and then they get up and they go, "I want my freaking money back. This movie's stupid." I want to choke them because, like, this movie is awesome. It's great.
You'll have to explain that to me.
It's thought provoking, and I am sitting there going, "These stupid fucks missed it." Like, seriously, don't go to movies.
Yeah. So overall, you really enjoyed it.
I did.
Yeah, because it was in your top five of the year.
It is my top five of the year, and remains firmly so.
So, like I said, I think I'll steal a line from Hermano that I think this movie was a little overhyped from the two of you and from other reviews that I read. And I think this movie kind of blows its load a little bit in the first third, and it is a bit too long. I found places I could trim about 10 minutes or so.
Mono's raising his hand to stab Tim.
I'm going to do a Bourne movie in a second, stab you with his pen.
Liam Neeson, of course, is awesome.
Yes.
I think he's great. All the acting performances in this are pretty well done. You know, you have the annoying character who is annoying and you want him to die. You have other kind of tropey characters, but they don't fall too much into tropes where you're like, okay, I've seen this before, let's move on. So, now, the plane crash sequence is filmed beautifully, and the after effects of that are very well done, too. Like I said, there is a character, this is early on in the film, I'm not spoiling anything, there's a character who dies as a result of the plane crash after the survivors have found everybody and huddled together.
Well, he's dying.
Yes, he's dying. And the best sequence of this movie is, in my opinion, is Liam Neeson consoling him. His character consoling him. And
pretty much just telling him straight up what's happening. Yeah, he's not lying to him, saying maybe things going to be okay.
Telling him the truth.
You're going to die.
But it's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay.
And
it's not going to hurt.
Telling him what he's going to feel. And later on, you realize how he knows what to tell him. Later on, you realize his experience. And now, this is actually a very deep movie. You know,
yes.
It's kind of an existential movie.
There's a lot of layers to this movie.
Yeah. It's titled The Gray. It's obviously a reference to the in-between. In between life and death. And I don't think this is spoiling anything. I want to ask you guys, do you think that these characters are actually in limbo? That they may have died on the plane, on the plane crash, but their souls, these seven people, are trying to find peace and move on?
I've heard that, but I don't buy it.
Why not?
Because of events that happen in the movie over the course of it.
Okay.
Which I don't want to get into say anything about this. I'm not sure if it's a potential spoiler or not.
Hermano?
I did not hear that. I can see where people might think that because of some of the themes that are going on in the movie, but I didn't take that away from the movie myself.
What ultimately did you take away from the movie?
About
what it was about?
I think it was just about... See, so I'm afraid to walk into potential spoiler territory because I want to go into what I think the movie was about.
I want to set up a spoiler thing here then?
Do you want to get some more initial thoughts out first?
Well, I mean, is there anything else you'd want to get into before we get into spoilers?
I liked how this movie had, I think, a good amount of characters. And in most movies that have like a large ensemble, there are always like throwaway characters where like, you're like, you know, they don't treat those characters with respect. Like, when they die, they're just dead. In this movie, I feel like they treated every character was treated with respect. Like, had a meaningful, like, mini arc.
Yeah, just about everybody has the right amount of screen time.
You're given a little bit of backstory to each character. You're given maybe a little bit of a peek into the incentive of why they want to survive. Mm-hmm. And inevitably, when those characters reach their outcome or what happens to them, I think everyone's treated with respect. And I greatly appreciated that from the movie, because a lot of times you're going to have a movie with a lot of people. Some people are just thrown away. Like, you never get to understand why they're there. Their deaths are treated like they didn't even matter. I feel like every death in this movie is treated like it mattered, and it's impactful, and you feel like the choices they make. And when they die, you're left with kind of like this like sadness, like you got to know this person, and you know they had family, and you know what I mean. Like, I just loved that they were treated that way, because I think most movies don't do that.
Did you want to expand on that, Wally?
I do, but I don't want to say anything potentially spoilerific, because I do have a point to make about those particular characters as they exit the movie.
Okay, let's get into spoilers then.
Spoilers.
It's interesting. Going back to what I said about my opinion of maybe these characters having died on the plane and being stuck in limbo, and maybe it's their souls are trying to find peace and move on. Larry E. Dixon on WordPress.com came up with an interesting statement that I found. This film does not inspire the moviegoer to trust God in the hard circumstances of life, to say the least. It is a virtual tribute to the human will to survive, but the fact that God doesn't rescue them does not mean God does not exist. I'm going to ask you guys also, do you think this whole experiment is actually a test by God for these seven men to see who's worthy of heaven and hell? I came away with that in this movie.
I can see why people would say that, because of the wolves. Because it seems that whenever a character is ready to is killed, wolves show up out of nowhere and drag him away.
Uh-huh.
But not every single character goes down that way.
Right.
One guy falls out of a tree, one guy drowns, one guy freezes to death, one guy just stops, and then the wolves come to get him.
Uh-huh.
So that metaphor of like the wolves being like, you know, hell, you know, coming to get him, or what have you, that doesn't make any sense, because if that was the case, that would stay a consistent theme throughout the movie. As you know, as opposed to just happening periodically to some characters and not to others.
Okay.
The only reason I don't buy that theory is Liam Neeson's character. In the beginning of the movie, there's a scene where it looks like he's about to attempt suicide.
Yes.
He thinks better of it. It looks like maybe he's you get the feeling that maybe he's attempted it before and you're not sure why. Throughout the movie, he keeps referring back to his wife, who he keeps saying he wants to get back to, I believe. I've saw this movie so long ago, some of it's a little foggy, but I believe he wants to get back to his wife. And the whole movie, you're thinking, like, he just wants to, because he's never in, like, Alaska or something.
Yeah, yes. They're in Alaska.
And the whole movie, he's like, I just want to get back to my wife. I want to get back to you. I miss you. Stuff like that. And by the end of the movie, you realize she's been dead all along.
Right.
Like, she had died from some sickness. So the only reason I don't buy that is that if he was in limbo, he would go like straight to where she was. Like, wouldn't be like he wouldn't find peace. He would want to be with her. That's the whole reason he would want to commit suicide.
Well, if he was in limbo, and God was testing him, because if he had already thought of committing suicide, then wouldn't this be a test for God to say, are you worthy to go to heaven? Are you worthy to be with your wife?
That's a good point, but until the point where, I mean, it really feels like it's a survival story, because at one point he practically breaks down, and you get the feeling, the sense that he pretty much is like said screw God when God couldn't save his wife.
Yeah.
You get the feeling that maybe he's prayed to God before.
Well,
and
he even does this when he's the last one left, I think. He even does this this is after the last person he's with drowns, and he tries to save the person who's stuck underwater. With his foot is caught.
That was one of my favorite scenes in the movie.
That was a very tough scene.
You see how close he is. How close this guy. This guy literally drowns in like a couple inches of water.
Yeah, yeah. But after that scene, he lays down on a rock and is looking up at the sky and pleading to God to give him a sign.
Yep.
And
that's my favorite scene in the movie.
That is also a very good scene, but it still doesn't mean that he couldn't be in limbo. He could still be in limbo, you know? So, I don't know.
I think that's a very valid point. I could see where you would think that or where anyone would think that, but I just got something different from it. I got that he was actually trying to survive, and he was, like, that whole, like, screw you, God, I'll do it myself. Mm-hmm. Isn't that the line?
Yes.
Something along those lines? I love that scene because it's shot so beautifully. Mm-hmm. Like, you're just looking down, like, at this valley, and he's just looking for a sign, like, anything to just give him, like, a glimmer of hope. Just something to hold on to keep him going, mm-hmm. and nothing. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, my God, it was so powerful for me. Like, this movie had so many moments like that it just blew me away. Mm-hmm. Like, how deep this movie was. And it was a movie that was playing in January.
Mm-hmm. Like, it's cold out.
I guess, technically, but I mean, it just blew me away. This movie floored me.
Wally?
I see it as a character arc where you have a guy who's just so sad and depressed. Like, all he does is kill things. He's basically there to protect the workers from animal attack, mm-hmm. Specifically wolves. And, you know, one night everyone's out, you know, having a good time, they're drinking, and he just walks out into the back area of the camp that he's staying at for an oil company and puts a rifle barrel in his mouth and is ready to just kill himself. He really feels he's got no will left in himself to live. And then he ends up with these guys in the crash. And he's really the only guy who's managed to keep his head and, like, all right, this is what we have to do.
He takes on the leader role.
Yeah. And so he's doing everything he can to get these guys out. Mm-hmm. And when he gets to the end of the movie, all the guys that he's been trying to lead are dead. And he's not depressed anymore. At this point, when he turns the corner and he sees the big-ass wolf.
That he's in the den.
He is angry at this point.
He's defiant. Like,
I'm not going down like this. I'm going down on my own terms.
Speaking of that scene, how do you interpret that last scene?
I interpret it as, like, if I were in that situation, I'd probably be that same level of angry. I wouldn't just be like, oh, I'm in the den, I guess I can't fight anymore.
I mean,
like,
there's a reason why he should be incredibly angry, because the whole time he takes this leadership role, he's leading these guys, and there is some dissension in the group, especially about one of the characters. He's like, why are you the leader? Why are we following you? And he's trying to create this rift in between the group, but eventually they all stick with Liam Neeson because he seems to have all the answers, and he's trying to rationalize, and he has a little knowledge as to, like, how wolves operate. We're, like, in their you know, area of their wolf den, and, like, they usually have, like, about a 50-mile radius. I think if we head towards this way, you know, this should be, like, all his knowledge backfires on him. Like, he pretty much leads himself to literally the middle of the wolf den. So, I mean,
or maybe God leads him to that direction.
Someone's very spiritual today, but
coming from a non-spiritual person, I see a lot of spirituality in this movie.
Oh, there's an incredible amount of spirituality in this movie. I can definitely see why you would say that, but I just took it as, like, man, like, every step of the way, everything he tried to do just backfired. Like, he's, like, trying to say, like, let's do this, let's head towards the trees, let's you know, like, and one by one they get picked off, and the whole final of the movie, he's been heading the wrong way the whole time. Like, holy crap. Like, I was just like, man, this is like The Mist all over again. Like, that ending is just such a freaking, like, punch
to the
face.
Well, then the movie is kind of reflective of his life after his wife dies, I guess, of him going in the wrong direction.
Just that, like, I mean, think of his whole being. His wife dies, he gets a job in Alaska, which is incredibly depressing. His whole job is to do
That's
nothing.
That's not saying much for Alaskans.
No, I'm just saying, like, he's in this, it looks like he's in this, like, practically like a frozen hell. Like, it's wicked cold. He's outside. He's like a sniper. And all he does is deal in death. He shoots wolves and kills all day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, can you imagine that existence after you've lost probably the most important person in your life, potentially?
Yeah. You're spending a lot of time alone with your own thoughts.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, I think the plane crash gives him something to live for. Like, he's got to try to save these people, which is what he's been doing all along. It's his purpose.
Yeah.
you know, he's been saving them from these wolf attacks, and now he's trying to save them, and one by one, he can't, like, he's power, it almost, the movie gives him, like, almost like this, the guy with all the answers, but he's powerless to really do much of anything.
I mean, like, he quotes a poem that he sees on his father's wall right before he goes into...
Well, he quotes it throughout the whole movie.
Yeah, but then when he sees the last wolf, he recites the poem in its entirety.
Yes.
And that's when he makes his big charge, and then the movie drops to credits.
Yeah.
Which leads us to what happens after the credits.
Yes, tell me what happens after the credits.
After the credits, it's a camera panning across the den, and you hear, like, heavy breathing, and Liam Neeson's lying back on the giant wolf that is also breathing really, really shallowly. And they're both kind of like spent, like they've just been fighting it this whole time. And that's the whole, that's like the last shot, the actual last shot of the movie.
Them both bloodied and battered, and but just, still alive?
They've just had like this crazy...
Was
like,
the wolf breathing as well? I thought
Wolf is also breathing like very shallow.
Oh, yeah, it brings it back to one of the scenes in the beginning where he kills one of the wolves and it's dying. And he puts his head down on it and he like kind of listens to it take its last few breaths.
Yes.
It's reminiscent of that scene, except they're both... look like they've been hurt. It's really a close-up, a tight shot of both their heads, pretty much.
Huh.
And they're just lying, like, Liam Neeson's lying across the wolf, and they're both just heavy breathing, and then it just cuts to black again.
Then what do you think is the purpose of that? To have closure?
Well, it's like they it's almost like they fought each other. Are they both going to die? It leaves it wide open. Is it like a mutual respect between wolf and man now, because that's the alpha wolf?
So don't you think that undercuts the ending of the film before the credits?
I think it still leaves an ambiguous as. I mean, I think inevitably he was surrounded by wolves. Like, just because he went one-on-one with the alpha male doesn't mean that the other wolves are just going to be like, hey, you know what? You killed our leader. You can walk out.
Well, isn't the wolf that kills the alpha male automatically become the next alpha male?
Not necessarily all the time in nature.
It's not like he's...
That's how they established it in the context of this movie.
But that's not to say, like, another wolf won't challenge him.
Yeah.
Well, even so, it would be a while.
I mean... We're nitpicking a little bit. Like, I think it would have been fine if it just ended just the way it did and left it really open. Like, I mean, inevitably, I don't think it's that open because I think he's going to die regardless.
Huh.
But I think he's just maybe taking one of them with him. Like, he's just going out on his own terms.
Okay.
So I took it as if there's an actual respect now between the wolf, the alpha wolf, who's leading the wolves against Liam Neeson, and then Liam Neeson's the alpha male leading the humans to safety, and there's that kind of... I almost want to say it's like they figure out this respect for each other at the very end, despite the fact that they both probably dealt each other a mortal wound.
Okay. Was there anything else you guys wanted to mention?
This movie's awesome.
This movie is very awesome.
It's going to stay in my top 10 of 2012.
Okay, so I guess we'll give grades for it. Hermano?
Highest honor we can give.
You're kidding me.
A+.
You're giving it an A+?
Oh, absolutely.
Wow.
I can't say enough good things about this movie. I think it's excellent.
Have you seen it since you saw it in the theater?
No.
I'd be interested to hear what you say if you revisit it, because as you've admitted, it beat your expectations going into the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So I think may have skewed your viewpoint. So I think if you see it again, I really want to hear your take again.
I honestly don't see my grade coming down even a bit. Like, I really am very fond of this movie. I think it's not just that it surpassed my expectations for that one viewing. I think even if I had heard it was really, really great, like, I would have watched it and come out of it and been like, yeah, that was really, really great.
Okay.
I mean, I'm being completely sincere. I think this movie...
Was this in your top... Was this in your number one of the year so far?
I didn't have mine in order, but if I had to... It's like... It's between... 1 and 2 right now.
What was the other one?
My number one?
Yeah.
Batman.
Oh, yeah, that's
Batman.
Wait, we hadn't seen that movie by the time we recorded.
Oh, well,
that
right, I thought you were talking about
no,
as
no, no.
present. Up until that point, actually, up until that point, I would have had it at number one.
Oh, okay. Wally?
I will also give this an A+.
Crap.
This movie, after I saw it, I spent a lot of time thinking about it. Like, just kind of mulling over it. I have it on DVD. I watched it recently, actually, not that long ago. And I still am thinking about this movie to this day. Anything that can get me that much, like, thought-provoking stuff, and just, like, thinking about, like, you know, just like the feeling of the movie, like what would I do in that situation and things like that. The movie has such depth that I can't stop thinking about it.
Yeah, I'm not denying that there's moments in this movie that still stick. You know, granted, I only saw it 3 days ago, so there's still moments that will stick with me. It probably will stick with me for a while. But ultimately, I would give this movie a B. So
son of a bitch. That's an A minus.
So that's an A minus average for The Gray.
Bring it down the grade.
Okay, that does it for this episode of the First Time Watchers podcast. You can find us on Facebook by searching First Time Watchers. We post movie news and updates that we think you would be interested in. You can email us at firsttimewatchers@gmail.com.
And you can also follow us on Twitter at 1sttimewatchers@twitter.com.
Please download our episodes on iTunes. Also, feel free to leave a review. Any feedback is greatly appreciated. If you have any suggestions for movies for us to watch, please send a tweet, an email, or post on our Facebook page. Stay tuned for our next episode. I will be on vacation next week.
Why, Tim?
I'm not telling anybody why. So the podcast will be in the hands of Hermano and Wally. Have you guys figured out what you'll be talking about?
Maybe a Rad / Gleaming the Cube double feature.
Fair enough. Well, 2 weeks from now, all three of us will get together and talk about The Expendables 2.
Hells yeah.
Hell yeah.
First Time Watchers podcast, because we like to watch.
Wolves. Molly, what are you doing?
Practicing.
Practicing what?
I'm getting my throat ready for our podcast.
Oh. By gargling water? That's fucking insane. It's
professionalism is what it is.
Professionalism?
It's a shit you don't get to hear.
Yeah, behind the scenes, right?
Behind the scenes shit.
Hey, sure you're not auditioning for male pornography?
Nope, just...
male gay pornography?
Bukkake!
Wally auditioning for male gay bukkake.
Jesus, it's all he needs a reputation. I'm gonna do this at your wedding.
You got it, you got the job.